Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and help provide solutions that suit how you do business. From liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
You know success when you see it, or you think you do, the people in the spotlight. But what about those small business masterminds who succeed at making their money work harder? They do that by having a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, which now earns 5% annual percentage yield. Making your money work as hard as you do? That's how you business differently. Learn more about QuickBooks Money at quickbooks.com/5APY. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
Collaborate for a greener future at the Bloomberg Green Festival, a groundbreaking celebration of the thinkers, doers, and innovators leading the way, from design and culture to technology, science, and entertainment. Hear from inspirational speakers and immerse yourself in climate solutions, July 10th through 13th in Seattle. Title sponsor, Amazon. Official airline, Alaska Airlines. Get 20% off using promo code RADIO20 at BloombergLive.com/Green Festival. This is Bloomberg Business Week. I'm Carol Masser.
And I'm Bloomberg Quick Take's Tim Stenovek. We're here every day bringing you the latest news from the worlds of business and finance.
Plus technology, politics, economics, all harnessing the power of Business Week reporters and editors.
Not to mention our 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries.
You can download Bloomberg Business Week on iTunes, SoundCloud, or Bloomberg.com.
You can also listen to our radio show at 2 p.m. Eastern Time on Bloomberg Radio.
Or watch us on YouTube. Search Bloomberg Global News.
President Biden saying it's going to be a tough call on whether to order U.S. troops to get vaccinated. It's funny, Tim, I actually thought the military was already getting vaccinated, but that's not the case.
No, it's not. And look, I think this is something that a lot of organizations are struggling with right now. To what extent can you actually mandate a vaccination?
Yeah, exactly. So we've got that going on. We've got global cases of the virus topping 150 million. India remaining at the epicenter of the pandemic. They reported record new infections today. There's a lot going on. Let's get to it with Dr. Ian Lusbader, as we always do on our Fridays, clinical professor of medicine at NYU Langone, on the phone in Michigan on this Friday. Dr. Lusbader, nice to have you back with us. How are you?
Good, good. Always a pleasure. Happy Friday, guys.
Oh, my God. This has been, I can't, this week. It's been a hard week. Help me out here, because we did have a headline too, Reuters reporting that the president is set to ban most travel to the U.S. from India. So I was having a conversation with someone, and it's like, look, we're doing so great. And he's like, my wife, she's from India. We're not doing so great. The world is still having a tough time, and we don't get through it, all of us, until everybody gets through it. I know we talk to you about this kind of almost every week at this point, but give me your thoughts on this, especially as we watch what's going on in India and some other parts of the world.
So as we talked about last week, and really we're at the head of the curve, we knew that India was erupting, and I don't think we've anywhere near seen the top. You know, we're estimating 150 million global cases. I think all of these are really gross underestimates. I think the ability for many countries to track the real number of cases is flawed. In 1918, in the Spanish flu, it was estimated about a third of the world's population came down with the Spanish flu, higher mortality than we're seeing now. And that was before air travel was really widespread. So I think this is really sort of the tip of the spear, the tip of the iceberg is what we're seeing. And I do think, even though it may be politically incorrect, I think a travel ban, even though that's very imperfect, is probably very reasonable to do based on what we're seeing in India.
Why is that? Is that because of variants?
Yeah, so I think India has a number of problems. One, you know, for the skeptics of public health measures, this is really an example of what happens when there's really a systemic failure of public health measures. So one, very low vaccination rate, under 10%. Two, super spreader events that were really sanctioned by the government. And three, perhaps maybe cremation. You know, when you're burning particulate matter, wood, smoke, virions, we know that there's higher complications in areas of pollution or smoke. So it's possible that may also be playing a role. But I think the key thing is lack of vaccination Mm-hmm. And there's no quick solution to that.
My question also, though, it has to do with why a travel ban would be the right thing for the United States right now, given that we do have COVID running rampant through the U.S. as well. Is the variants element the concern that there could be a different strain of COVID brought over from another country?
Oh, for sure. Now, we already have here in Michigan, where I am, at a college graduation, the B.1.617 variant. We've seen some cases in California. That is one of the dominant strains in India, and the problem is it may be somewhat resistant to the Pfizer vaccine. It's unclear. We're getting some data on that. And it also seems to be more infectious, that it spreads more easily. So there are a lot of, you know, potential issues here, and, you know, some of those cases are also being seen in China. So we're nowhere done with what's going on.
So how does it potentially impact the United States?
Well, I think the United States, we're going to be okay. You know, we unfortunately, about 30% of adults under 35 have declined the vaccine. They have vaccine hesitancy. So we have to do a little bit better there. One of the reasons, for example, we can't mandate vaccines generally is the feeling that it's under an emergency use authorization, not FDA approved. So to make people take something that's not FDA approved does potentially cause a problem. So that may be one reason why we can't mandate it, although we'll have to see what happens with that. But I think in the U.S. we have about 40, going on 50% of adults vaccinated. I think we're going to be okay, but I'm not sure globally that's going to be the same case.
Hey, Dr. Lustbader, I'm wondering about if we're going to just continue to see, you know, a few weeks ago we were talking about what was happening in Brazil. Now we're talking about what's happening in India. Is this just going to keep going from one country to another country because of so many countries aren't vaccinated right now? Is this how the pandemic plays out over the next year?
Absolutely. You know, this is exactly what happened. Well, not exactly, but very similar to what happened in the 1918 Spanish flu. Basically, it went around the country exactly as it did in the United States. You know, we saw New York a year ago as the epicenter, and people in the Midwest thought, oh, we're safe. Now it hit both coasts and the Midwest. And then it went from country to country. That was primarily in, you know, World War II with troop ships going to Europe and so forth. That probably helped spread it. But I think we're going to see continued multiple waves. And unfortunately, without vaccination, you get mutation. And with mutation, you can get resistant viruses.
Right, which is why... Yeah, and we're also talking about booster shots and something we maybe will get into in the next block. Ian, sit tight for a second, and we'll come back to you in just a moment. We are talking with Dr. Ian Lustbader, clinical professor of medicine at NYU Langone Medical Center, on the phone from Michigan. But I do wonder, like, does it ultimately, if we don't have enough vaccinated, does it come back to us? I know Dr. Lustbader is saying we should be okay, but I do wonder.
Yeah, I do wonder too, especially with all the hesitancy that we're seeing, right? The people who wanted to get vaccinated have already gotten vaccinated.
And I'm having a lot of conversations with people who are like, I'm not going to do
I'm
it.
I'm not.
You're not.
No.
I am. I am like amazed in different walks of my life. And I'm respecting it because everybody has to make the decision they feel comfortable with. But it makes sense when he gives me 30% under age of 35 declining
right.
the vaccine. I get it. I get that number.
Right. It makes sense. Well, let's get right back to it with Dr. Ian Lustbader, clinical professor of medicine at NYU Langone's Medical Center, joining us now on the phone from Michigan. Dr. Lustbader, I want to just talk about reaction to the vaccine, because this is a question that Carol and I have been talking about a lot, and it's a question we've been asking. And I know a lot of people have been asking each other, hey, what was your reaction to the vaccine? Why are some people having such significant reactions to their second shot or even their first shot, and others aren't? And I'll share the example of my wife. She got the Moderna shot. After the second shot, she was really sick for, you know, about 12 hours and like nausea, vomiting. And I got the Pfizer shot. And after my second shot, I was achy, but it really went away after about 36 hours.
So Charlie Pellett, as usual, right on the money, and you as well, Tim. Vaccines and people's responses, not only to the vaccines, but to the COVID infection itself, are very complex. And I don't have a simple answer for you. There's some data that people who've had the virus and then get vaccinated, you know, there's a fair number of people who have asymptomatic COVID may have a more dramatic response. Hmm. And the composition of these vaccines is somewhat complex. You do have this RNA that's, at least for the Moderna and the Pfizer vaccines, surrounded by what's called the liposome or a lipid coat. And people, any vaccine, mumps, measles, rubella, tetanus, shingles vaccine, all of these vaccines that we give people typically do cause achiness at the site and fever. I mean, you're recognizing a foreign object, a foreign response, an invader. And, of course, the body has a variable response to it. What I would say, though, is that most of these are really relatively minor, limited usually to a day or two or less, and that even people who are on some immunosuppression, you know, rheumatoid arthritis, Crohn's disease, other medications, of course, talk to your doctor, seem to do well with it. So my answer would really be individual variation, the component of the vaccine, and just like a variable response to COVID, 99% do very well, 1% do not. And in some ways, it's hard to predict exactly why. Part of it is genetics, but part of it is expected. Any vaccine, any foreign substance, you usually get some immune response, and that's good. You want an immune response.
But does it mean anything if you don't have some kind of response to a vaccine? If you don't kind of feel anything, does that mean something different in terms of your ability to fight off COVID or some other kind of virus?
No, not necessarily. Some people breeze right through it. Some patients have asked about doing testing after. We don't really recommend that. We don't really do that. Most of the IgG COVID exposure shows nuclear capsid antibodies, which means the infection. You can, and some people, if they're really concerned, check antibodies for spike protein. All the patients I've seen who've had the vaccine do show spike protein. We don't do it routinely. So again, I think the data is very good. As we said, out of 200 million shots, only about 5,000 cases of people after either both shots or the single shot, J&J, that is, but the two RNA shots, have come down with COVID. So pretty effective.
Is there any data up to now that shows a different reaction or different reactions in general following Pfizer versus Moderna? Because there is that anecdotal sort of thing that people say, right? Oh, I hear, you know, this shot's worse than the other shot. But is there any data to back that up?
Not that I'm aware of. You know, they're very similar technology, the messenger RNA technology with encased in a liposome. And really what I would say is because it's so unpredictable, we should not really be asking for one or the other. They're all really quite effective. As you have pointed out correctly, don't get lax. In other words, we really need two shots, either 3 or 4 weeks apart for maximal immunity. And that's even a week or two after the second shot. You know, J&J, somewhat different. You still have to wait for that. But no, having a fever, chills does not necessarily make a difference. There are some people who just don't form antibodies. We see this with hepatitis B vaccine, mumps, measles, rubella. You can give people several shots, and some people just don't form antibodies. Not quite clear why that is.
Hmm. All right, good to know. Congratulations on the graduation. Thinking it might be your son, but hope you... Yeah. Well, congratulations.
Engineering. Thanks so much.
Really impressive.
Have a good week, guys.
Yeah, you have a great weekend. Stay safe. Of course, Dr. Ian Lusbader, clinical professor of medicine at NYU Langone, on the phone in Michigan today, always kind of provides clarification.
Also, good to know he's traveling.
He is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's vaccinated.
That. We're hearing that from folks.
We are.
Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. You need a company with extensive experience in specialized insurance. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and helping provide coverage that suits your needs. The Hartford offers insurance solutions that help mid to large-sized businesses, like yours, effectively manage risk, from liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. With extensive experience in underwriting, risk engineering services, and claims, The Hartford goes beyond the expected to deliver innovative, customizable solutions and service that your industry, that your business, demands. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
Success is more than the final destination. It's a path you take one step at a time. It's discipline. It's teamwork. And it's the drive and passion inside of us that comes before all recognition. It's what Stifel's been doing for over 130 years. Quietly, yet strategically, Stifel's become one of the fastest growing wealth management and investment banking firms in the country. Our financial advisors go beyond traditional wealth management to provide clients with direct access to one of the industry's largest equity research franchises and a leading middle market investment bank. Because success is the drive it takes to keep climbing, the passion to keep investing, the best of each of us made better by the best in all of us. And that is where success meets success. Start your journey at Stifel.com. That's Stifel.com.
Stifel Nicholas and Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
You know success when you see it. Or you think you do. The people in the spotlight. Athletes, actors, artists. But what about the people behind the scenes? You know, the ones who make it all happen. The lighting engineers, the sideline photographers, the caterers. They're small business masterminds. And if there's one thing they have in common, it's making their money work harder. That's why they have a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, where they are now earning a generous 5% annual percentage yield. Yes, 5% APY. Making your money work as hard as you do? That's how you business differently. Learn more about QuickBooks Money at quickbooks.com/5APY. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
This is Bloomberg Business Week with Carol Messer and Bloomberg Quick Takes Tim Stenovic from Bloomberg Radio.
Another one of our most read stories on the Bloomberg, it's about how President Biden's proposed tax hikes are creating a wealth advisor frenzy. It's getting a little nutty out there, Tim.
It is, especially if you have a ton of money. Joel Weber is editor at Bloomberg Business Week, and he joins us on the remote from Brooklyn. Laura Davison is congressional tax reporter for Bloomberg News on the phone from Washington, D.C. Joel, nothing has been, you know, put into policy yet. Nothing has been made law yet, but that hasn't stopped people from freaking out and from advisors from playing therapist.
Oh, man, the freak out has really begun. I think everyone is just itching to understand, like, what could happen, what might happen, what the odds are, what they should be doing now. And if you have enough money to have a financial advisor, you are calling them maybe multiple times. And so Laura had the great idea to talk to a couple of financial advisors and get their advice for clients right now. And Laura, tell us what you learned.
So basically what advisors are saying is, you know, hurry up, let's make a plan, and then we got to wait and see what Congress actually does. This plan that Biden put out this week is going to go over a bunch of revisions, a bunch of negotiations, and probably is not going to look exactly like what the president proposed. So they're looking to pass some sort of plan, you know, September, October, but that could slip. So really there's only going to be a couple months at the end of the year before these tax increases likely take effect. So wealth advisors are saying, look, if you are going to have to sell any assets, take any capital gains and pay taxes on those gains, let's do that now versus waiting for the next couple years, because that capital gains rate, you know, will likely increase. You know, it's 20% now. Biden has proposed almost 40%. So they're saying, hey, you know, if you've got some shares that you're going to sell, let's sell them now, pay the tax at the lower rate. They're even saying if you have some assets that have really appreciated recently, you know, think like Tesla stock or Bitcoin, go ahead, sell those, buy it back, and then you've locked in those gains at the lower rate, because who knows what the future beholds.
But it does still seem like, Laura, there is even uncertainty in doing that, because you and our colleague Ben Steverman in the piece raised the possibility that there could be even retroactive changes, correct?
So this is the risk here. You know, Congress could say this is totally within their purview. You know, hey, the tax increases already took effect January 1 of 2021, which would mean any sort of planning would essentially be moot at this point, and you could actually end up hurting yourself here. Both Biden advisors as well as congressional Democratic advisors have said that they don't like doing this, that this isn't their plan. But, you know, there's always that risk out there until the bill is signed.
The thing I think is interesting is, what about the IRS putting more scrutiny on the wealthy when it comes to their taxes, kind of taking maybe a deeper look? President Biden has proposed $80 billion for the IRS to strengthen enforcement in the coming decade. How worried are they about that, Laura?
This could be a huge sea change. The wealthy and really taxpayers at every level have seen audits drop precipitously really in the past decade as the IRS has had its budget cut. They're basically proposing to double or even triple the IRS enforcement budget, bring in new auditors, bring in new data tools to find fraud. And also, one thing that's interesting is having for bank accounts, having some of the inflows and outflows from bank accounts reported to the IRS, so they have a little bit more visibility on how much money investors should be reporting. This would really be a sea change. And, you know, if you have a wealth advisor, it's probably also a good idea to make sure you have a good accountant and tax lawyer on hand as well.
Right. Make sure he's doing the right stuff.
And all those people right now are just like, hey, the financial advisor is like, great, I haven't heard from you forever. Thanks for picking up the phone and calling me. We'll come up with a plan now, jerk. But so Laura, I want to have a better understanding of this. So it's a hurry, wait strategy that they're basically advising. And are there rainy day implications to this? Like, are they saying, like, don't invest right now? Like, hold off until we know what's going on? Like, take us through the various ways that they're actually trying to coach people.
So basically they're telling people, you know, continue as you were. If you had a plan, you know, continue with that plan. But if you're looking to sell something, you know, let's do it sooner rather than later. Get the deal structured so that it can happen by New Year's Eve if you want to go ahead and execute on that. There's really so much uncertainty right now. Basically, every advisor is saying, you know, don't do anything yet. Let's just, you know, create some options for ourselves, look at different planning tools, and then we can make a decision once we kind of have a sense of what Congress is going to do here.
Okay, so I want to also understand, like, another element, and this part isn't in your current reporting, but I'd like to understand, like, you know, estate tax was potentially part of this first phase of talk. They it seems like they've tabled that. Like, what are these financial advisors, what do they have to say about this, the likelihood of a potential estate tax down the road?
Yeah, so the estate tax right now doesn't kick in until, you know, you have $11.7 million of debt, or twice that if you're married. Biden left that out of the plan, likely because there's some Democrats in the Senate who would not support lowering that threshold. But he did campaign on bringing that threshold down to $3.5 million, so a lot more people would be affected by that. That is one of those elements where you could see, you know, if moderates and progressives are negotiating over different elements, that's one area ripe that progressives would say, hey, we really want to get this in here. It raises a bunch of money. It would help Biden pay for a lot of his spending proposals. So that's one area that's still in play.
The Tax Law and Jobs Act of 2017, the Trump tax cuts, those are still pretty fresh. So what did advisors say to you about the idea of people just kind of doing nothing, and perhaps even if there are changes, doing nothing and maybe even waiting for a new administration to revert to rules back to today?
So this is the other thing that advisors are really looking at is, you know, if Republicans sweep in, you know, in 2024, you know, do we basically just have a sea change back in the other direction? Which, as we've seen, you know, with the use of reconciliation, this partisan tool to get bills through Congress, you know, if we keep having the pendulum swing one way or another, we could see policy changes on tax and anything, you know, every 4 years changing significantly. And this is something that, you know, really has frustrated tax lawyers, for example. They're just finally getting all the details from the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act into place, and now they basically have to totally undo them, and all the advice they had given their clients totally goes out the window. It's very, very confusing and hectic.
Well, the freak out, the frenzy says to me, Laura, that the wealthy do expect some change. Even if the political process may be tough, they ultimately do expect they're going to be paying more taxes. Is that a fair assessment?
Taxes, more likely than not, are going to go up. Which taxes, how much, who's going to be affected, that's what's going to be negotiated over the next several months.
And you know who makes money along the way? The financial advisors, right?
And the lawyers, too.
Listen, it's a great story, and I feel like, you know, Jill, you put taxes in a story here on Bloomberg, and, like, everybody wants to read it.
Yeah, I think the amount of information that we're going to be consuming on this, like, we were all armchair quarterbacks for the pandemic, you know, on everything about the virus, about vaccines, and now we're entering this new phase where, you know, now we have a new administration, new stuff, and I think, you know, step up in basis is going to be, like, this thing that everyone is going to want to know about. So we're just going to be watching this so closely. It is such a core competency story at Bloomberg, and we'll just own this for the months to come.
Such
and
concept.
I'm sure we'll be reading more from Laura like every day. Just keep it coming, Laura.
Explaining it all to us. Laura Davison, thank you so much. Congressional tax reporter at Bloomberg News. She's with us on the phone in D.C. Jill Weber, editor of Bloomberg Business Week. Have a great week and on the remote access from Brooklyn.
Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. You need a company with extensive experience in specialized insurance. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and helping provide coverage that suits your needs. The Hartford offers insurance solutions that help mid to large-sized businesses, like yours, effectively manage risk, from liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. With extensive experience in underwriting, risk engineering services, and claims, The Hartford goes beyond the expected to deliver innovative, customizable solutions and service that your industry, that your business demands. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
Success is more than the final destination. It's a path you take one step at a time. It's discipline, it's teamwork, and it's the drive and passion inside of us that comes before all recognition. It's what Stifel's been doing for over 130 years. Quietly, yet strategically, Stifel's become one of the fastest growing wealth management and investment banking firms in the country. Our financial advisors go beyond traditional wealth management to provide clients with direct access to one of the industry's largest equity research franchises and a leading middle market investment bank. Because success is the drive it takes to keep climbing, the passion to keep investing, the best of each of us made better by the best in all of us. And that is where success meets success. Start your journey at Stifel.com. That's Stifel.com.
Stifel Nicholas and Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
You know success when you see it. Or you think you do. The people in the spotlight. Athletes, actors, artists. But what about the people behind the scenes? You know, the ones who make it all happen. The lighting engineers, the sideline photographers, the caterers. They're small business masterminds. And if there's one thing they have in common, it's making their money work harder. That's why they have a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, where they are now earning a generous 5% annual percentage yield. Yes, 5% APY. Making your money work as hard as you do? That's how you business differently. Learn more about QuickBooks Money at quickbooks.com/5APY. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
This is Bloomberg Business Week with Carol Messer and Bloomberg Quick Takes Tim Stenovic from Bloomberg Radio.
The Bloomberg Big Take today, it's a Bloomberg exclusive that you kind of need to be focusing on, and it's a story that only we have. And today it's about the seemingly nonstop behind-the-scenes drama between Apollo Global Management's billionaire co-founders and what it means for investors.
Heather Perlberg is a private equity reporter at Bloomberg News, joins us on the phone from Washington, D.C. Heather, this is quite a read. I can see why it is the big take today. What has been happening behind the scenes as Leon Black has exited Apollo?
Well, Leon Black is sort of a known classicist, I mean, named the firm Apollo, and it's really starting to look a lot like a classic Greek tragedy. You have the drama, the revenge, the power grab, and at the center of it is this, you know, $455 billion investing powerhouse that's really had a tumultuous year or so. And Leon Black was just really sort of scrutinized for his ties to Jeffrey Epstein for most of last year, moving into this year, eventually sort of forced to step aside. And you had his two potential successors, Mark Rowan and Josh Harris. And Mark Rowan, you know, took the reins. Harris had this sort of failed bid to become CEO, and since then he's really been sidelined. And at a bare-knuckle firm like Apollo, that doesn't look good.
Is it? It sounds a little surprising, too. Is it?
Well, you have these three men who are sort of leading different parts of the business. Mm. Josh Harris was always in charge of private equity. Now Apollo made this grab for Athene, the huge insurance company that has made it sort of the envy of Wall Street for getting such huge fees. And private equity is certainly a smaller part of their business. And Harris is just being kind of slowly relinquished of duties, shopping for a place in Florida. For a man who was sort of a known workaholic and really micromanaging into the nitty-gritty of deals in the New York office, he wouldn't be moving to Florida if he really had his pulse on the business.
What do employees who work under Harris or have worked under Harris think of that? Because there are some pretty jarring anecdotes in here about what they think.
Well, he wasn't known to be an easy man to work for, and that's been sort of widely reported in the past. But yeah, we did hear some tales of his underlings humming "Ding Dong, the Witch is Dead" from The Wizard of Oz. So I guess they were relieved.
That's a little harsh. Wow.
To say, right?
Yeah, exactly. When you think about it, as you write and report, you know, I mean, this is an individual, Harris, that is, who has spent, you report, years positioning himself and becoming a more public face of the company at conferences and in the media, you know, kind of setting the stage. And it's interesting to see how things play out. And Leon Black, we know, has taken a big step back, but what is his involvement? What are you hearing as things change and evolve?
Well, he really is not supposed to be involved in any investing activity anymore. You know, he cited health issues. There was a story that he had kind of called into one meeting that was quickly reported by the media, and I think there's just so much scrutiny over his involvement that he'll probably stay out of it for a little while. I mean, there's some speculation that he might come back eventually,
right?
But nobody really knows in what form or what that would look like.
I always think about all of the stories that you and your team and others have reported at Bloomberg. You know, those key senior people, they are often crucial when it comes to raising new funds, creating new funds, the relationships that they've had for years that allow them to raise new money to invest. So how does Harris having a much smaller role and maybe potentially no role at some point, how does that impact the firm, which is a publicly traded firm?
At some point, we'll see how that shakes out. I mean, mm-hmm. He definitely has relationships with big limited partners, just like all of the founders will have their own relationships with people. And Josh Harris is still a key man on the largest ever private equity fund that Apollo had raised, which, you know, they haven't finished investing yet. So if he were to leave, which, you know, people are speculating he will in the next year or so, that would trigger a big problem for Apollo. I mean, investors would essentially have to sign off on the fund continuing to do deals. So investing would pause or maybe even stop. And Apollo certainly doesn't want that to happen. So he does have a little bit of leverage at the moment, too.
Yeah, stock's up about 13% this year.
Hey, Heather, what did you learn specifically about what Harris is doing in Florida and has been doing during the pandemic, and indications, just in about 30 seconds or so, that he's thinking about making more permanent roots there?
He's been spotted at a lot of different nice restaurants, riding his bike around town in the Palm Beach area. Huh. You know, I think there's a lot of people who have sort of fled New York City in the pandemic, and we had definitely heard that he's looking to buy a place down there. Apollo's opening offices down there, so it isn't the craziest thing, along with other firms, to kind of help retain talent. But for someone like Josh, you know, this could be a sign that if he wanted to sell down Apollo shares, taxes wouldn't be as much of an issue as they were in New York.
We'll see if we see him a lot more at sports events, too, as that opens up, because, of course, he's got Harris Blitzer Sports and Entertainment that he set up with Blackstone's David Blitzer. Hey, great reporting, as always. And that, of course, is the Big Take story. You can find out more at Bloomberg and at Bloomberg.com.
I'm driving in my car, I turn on the radio.
How about you let me drive?
Oh, no.
Who's gonna drive you home?
Honey, please, I'll do the driving.
Drive on.
Excuse me, I want to drive.
Just drive, baby.
It's the question that drives us.
This is the Drive to the Close.
That funky music will drive us till the dawn.
On Bloomberg Radio.
Just about 10 minutes left in today's trading session. Charlie Pellett putting it so perfectly, a late day fade here on this Friday. We are definitely off our best levels of the session and definitely off record highs for the broader market. Let's get to it with James Chakmak. He is back with us, partner and portfolio analyst. He focuses on tech stocks at the asset management firm Clockwise Capital. He's back with us on the phone in Miami. James, good to have you back with us. What a week. Tech stocks, this is your world. I'm guessing you might not have gotten too much sleep this week, but sum it up for us, if you would, if there is kind of a big overarching theme from some of the names that reported this week.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Sure.
We saw all the big companies reporting this week, Amazon, Apple, Facebook, Microsoft. And I think the big overarching takeaway from those is that these companies are proving to be increasingly essential to the world. And the results certainly prove that, that not only are they essential to the way businesses operate and consumers, but they're essentially the new utilities. And that essential infrastructure that they've built is something that's going to be virtually impossible to derail for the foreseeable future. And the new companies that are coming into the market are predicated on leveraging the infrastructure those companies have built. So no matter what, you know, they're here to stay, and there's very little that can stop their momentum.
That said, James, it does seem like it was kind of the tale of two different types of companies, the big tech companies versus the small tech companies. I mean, you saw what happened with Facebook's report and Alphabet's report, Microsoft's report, and then, of course, Amazon's report. And at the same time, what happened to Spotify, to Pinterest, and to Twitter? So, mm-hmm. So where's the divergence there? What's going on?
Yeah, what we're seeing right now, I mean, the market has gone absolutely straight up. For over the last year, every single thing that was thrown at investors was dismissed. You know, depressed earnings for 2020, regulatory risks, the election uncertainty. You know, we had a couple of blips here and there, but it's essentially gone straight up. And then now you tack on inflation concerns as we look into the coming weeks and months. Obviously, some of those stocks that you just named, you know, they're higher multiple stocks and more sensitive. But ultimately, when you do look at the underlying performance of those companies, particularly Spotify, that's one that we actually added to on the pullback because of their audio platform that they're building and positioning, we think, you know, relative to Apple Music. But the results clearly are strong, but the multiples attributed to these stocks may be pricing in an increased discount factor as, you know, we have some outstanding risks as we look forward.
So I'm going to go through a quick laundry list. Apple, did you add to the position? Did you reduce? What's your take there?
Well, I'll tell you, when we turned into the new year, one of the things that we did was we knew that the market was going into a rotation trade, you know, going into the travel space and airlines and things of that nature. But those businesses we didn't think are sustainable. So what we did was we sized up our highest conviction names like Apple, like a Whirlpool, like an Amazon, like a Facebook, you know, gross them up to 10-15% position. So huge, sizable weights within the portfolio, given our conviction of those names. So we haven't sold any, but they remain super concentrated as part of the book.
So that's true.
We can go through your list.
So that's true Apple. So that's Apple, Amazon, who else?
Facebook, Whirlpool. Those are our top four.
Okay.
Yeah. It's over 10% weights each.
Okay.
How does the rest of the year look like? I mean, here we are at a point where equity markets are just blowing past expectations that analysts set at the beginning of the year already. These are high expectations that these companies have to deliver on. Are they going to be able to do it?
I think the short answer to that is yes, because technology can and will always move forward. So no matter what type of market blips that we see, the world is moving toward the cloud, and the world is moving toward flexibility and enhanced productivity. And any businesses that allow you to augment and optimize that productivity and flexibility by via companies that either build the cloud or leverage the cloud will continue to benefit. But you know, from a macro sense, you know, we do have cause for concern. You know, whenever you open up the economy, when you shut it down and open it up with a flip of a switch, you know, there is going to be a huge bottleneck on the supply side. So inflation, even though the companies that we are investing are deflationary, which gives us confidence in them, but we will have, likely have, you know, inflationary risks near term. And some of these stocks, you know, that do have high growth, super high growth and high multiples associated with them, could certainly be under pressure. You know, the analogy we make is kind of like a traffic accident. You know, even though you clear the accident, you know, it will still take a lot of time for the traffic to clear up. And that's kind of how we're thinking about the supply constraints of the world and what the implications on pricing and inflation and associated interest rates.
Hey, James, how do you make sense of kind of old economy, new economy, Ford versus Tesla, or, you know, Whirlpool? That's an old economy, but they definitely benefited during the pandemic. We've talked with the CEO on air, and he says folks have been at home cooking and spending more time at home. He doesn't anticipate that's going to change anytime soon, that consumer habits don't change that quickly. But it's an old economy company versus, you know, an Amazon where we can shop online and do things differently. How do you make sense? How do you make investment decisions? Because you've got a little bit of both in your portfolios.
Yeah, it's you know, Whirlpool, like, it's interesting. It's not really a tech company per se in the traditional sense, but
it's a savior in my house if I've got a dishwasher though and washing machine.
Same for me.
Well, the changes they're making on the production side, you know, they're getting much more efficient in their manufacturing capabilities, and they have been the low cost manufacturer of appliances, and the more efficiencies they're able to drive on that, they'll be able to improve their asset turnover and in turn see appreciation in the shares, and you've been seeing that. But as far as the new economy versus old, really the way we look at it is boils down to their DNA. You know, are they willing to make the sacrifices that may cause near-term pain in terms of margin and growth, you know, to be able to adapt, or are they going to be stuck in their old ways and try to eke out as much cash flow as possible? You know, a company like Intel, for example, they're actually trying to rip the Band-Aid off and become something new, a manufacturing company that could ultimately hurt their profit performance over the near term. So it really boils down to, if it is a legacy company, are they willing to adapt? If the answer is no, then they're out. If the answer is yes, then we'll take a look. And as far as the new companies go, are they aligned to take advantage of the cloud and be able to, you know, grow their customer base independent of geo location,
right,
and continue to pass on ultimately consumer surplus in with respect to time savings, because ultimately anything that saves you time wins. Hey. So if you look at any company that is succeeding right now, they save businesses or consumers time in some way, shape, or form.
All right, we're going to leave it on that note. James, nice to check in with you. Have a wonderful weekend. James Chakmak, he's partner and technology analyst at Clockwise Capital, on the phone from Miami.
Thanks for listening to Bloomberg Business Week. Download the podcast on iTunes, SoundCloud, or Bloomberg.com.
And you can also listen to our radio show at 2 p.m. Eastern on Bloomberg Radio, or watch us on YouTube. Search Bloomberg Global News.
Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and help provide solutions that suit how you do business, from liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
Collaborate for a greener future at the Bloomberg Green Festival, a groundbreaking celebration of the thinkers, doers, and innovators leading the way, from design and culture to technology, science, and entertainment. Hear from inspirational speakers and immerse yourself in climate solutions, July 10th through 13th in Seattle. Title sponsor, Amazon. Official airline, Alaska Airlines. Get 20% off using promo code Radio20 at BloombergLive.com/greenfestival.